21. We do have a quorum this morning, a House Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism. Present in the room, Representative Foster, my vice chair, Representative Olson, Representative Thompson, Representative Gardner, myself, Bob Herron. If you have a cell phone, please turn it off. Today, we have a busy schedule. We have two bills where it's intended the chair to move them today, House Bill 120 and House Bill 67. And then at approximately 11:30, we're going to get a preview of the Lunch and Learn presentation today, which is Admiral Barrett of Alyeska on low flow. Essentially, it's just a very shortened version of his full hour presentation during Lunch and Learn. So at this time, let's move to House Bill 120. Mr. Davis, if you could come forward. I'm unaware of any amendments, and we discussed it last time fully. Mr. Davis, you're going to give us a brief overview, and then we'll take action on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to comment on HB 120. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm with the Alaska Industrial Development Authority, which is commonly known by its acronym ADA. The bill before us is HB 120, which would add the ability of ADA to work with a federal tax program called New Markets Tax Credits. It's a companion bill to HB 119, which the committee already passed out. Both bills seek to add new tools for us to do economic development. What New Market Tax Credits lets you do is cooperate with qualified equity investors who put money into a project and receive up to 39% on their federal taxes. And they work with a community development entity, and we have one in Alaska called Alaska Growth Capital, but it could also be with others. The problem with this program, and it's outlined in a white paper attached to your packet, is that the program requires the bank, the lending side, to take interest only for 7 years and not to put a lien on the properties. Because of that, the banks have been unwilling since 2008 to lend on these programs with any alacrity. So that we canvassed other states, as we said in our written answers. We talked to New Market Tax Credit Funds. We talked to Alaska Growth Capital and to council who deal with these credits. And their suggestion is what resulted in HB 120, which is that ADA should offer a guarantee of that lending piece so that banks would lend again, or ADA could directly make a loan if no bank was willing to do so. But we would, of course, prefer to guarantee a bank loan so that, again, this would be entirely private capital building projects in low-income communities, because New Market Tax Credits work in census areas which have either high poverty rates or which meet certain other criteria to help targeted communities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. So is there questions from the committee members? Seeing none. Deb, there is a written testimony from Alaska Growth Capital, Hugh Short. Could you please make sure that gets in the record? And then is there any, if there's no questions for Mr. Davis, anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 120? Seeing none, we have no amendments. The chair will entertain a motion to move this proposed legislation from committee.
Did we close out public testimony?
We will now. Public testimony is closed.
Thank you. I move that House Bill 67.
120.
Well, okay, well, you want to do both of them at the same time?
No.
Shorten the meeting.
I'm just going in chronological order.
Yeah.
House Bill 120 with attached fiscal notes as amended. Did we amend it? No. House Bill 120 with attached fiscal notes, move out of committee.
With individual recommendations?
Yep.
Seeing no objection, 120 is on its way. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Okay. Let's move to the one where we do have both people testify that are in the room as well as people online. Staff will do some, we'll have some video presentations. Usually in sequence of the individual presenters, but since we have two people calling in from Berlin, Germany, we will do those now so that they can get on the record. It is the director and producer of On the Ice. Kara Marcosis and Andrew McLean, are both of you online this morning?
Yes, we're here.
Yep.
Okay.
We're here.
Okay. For the record, please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony on House Bill 67.
My name is Andrew Ukbeha McLean, and I'm the writer and director of On the Ice.
And my name is Kara Marcou, and I'm the producer of On the Ice.
Okay. Begin your testimony, please.
Well, we have been called to testify in support of the bill to extend the tax credit for the state of Alaska for the film industry, and we wanted to express the support of it and how important it was to us in getting our film On the Ice made, which we shot entirely in Alaska, entirely in the town of Barrow this past April. And, it was done with the support of the Alaska Film Office and with the making use of the tax credit offered by the state of Alaska, which was instrumental to us.
And I could just add that from the producing side, I worked directly with the incentive and Dave Worrell and his team of people. For us, the incentive was crucial in getting our first main cash investor, because we used what we knew we'd be getting back from the incentive as a motivator for him, because he knew that half of his investment would be coming back to him at a certain point for sure, and that his gamble was then half that risk. But knowing that we had that fairly large chunk of cash allowed other investors to fill it, to complete our budget and feel safer in their investment, knowing that all of our money was coming together. So really the impetus for us to get that first main cash investor to make the film possible was because of the incentive and how aggressive the incentive is. So it was genuinely a real catalyst for us and for the project.
Okay.
I don't know if people have questions about the project or how we went about it, or Andrew's from Barrow.
Sure. The film, we can tell you, the film was entirely an Alaskan film, born and raised in Alaska in the towns of Barrow and Fairbanks, and the film is set in Alaska. It was entirely shot there, and we used almost all of the actors, every actor except for one, was from Alaska, most from Barrow, obviously, but some from other parts of the state. We flew crew in from all over the state, as well as from outside of Alaska.
And some crew from Barrow and Anchorage.
Yes. And we just premiered the film at the Sundance Film Festival last month, and we're right now showing the film at the Berlin International Film Festival.
Okay, a couple of questions. One question is why you're in Berlin, but you've explained that. Have others seen Eric Berlin? Have they seen your movie On the Ice yet?
Yes, we've had three public screenings.
This is our international premiere.
Right.
Wrong.
So there's been close to several thousand people have come to the film in Berlin, and several thousand saw it in Sundance in Utah in January.
And it's really a lot of people who have no awareness of Alaska and the diversity within the state. So it's really fascinating for them. And we've had some pretty exciting question and answer periods with people from all over Europe.
Okay, well, Karen, Andrew, this time I'm going to have staff present a clip to the committee and to the people in the audience here in the room. So just stand by. There may be questions after it. Okay, Rob, go ahead.
Okay.
Spent some rounds last night. That beat game was tight. You write it down? Couldn't stop for that. I passed out mid-run. You remember anything? Then come back to me. Gee, drop me, man. Drop a beat.
No.
Come on, drop it, man. Bump that. Nah, it ain't there.
Jay just freaking out, dude.
Got some news.
What's up?
You all right?
Nothing I can't handle. It's Ublu.
What, she finally dumped you?
No, she ain't gonna dump me, man. She might be a...
Fat? Ain't that how you like them chicks,
dude? I'm fat. No, no, man. She might be pregnant.
Damn.
Well, it's about time I made my mom a knocker, right?
What are you gonna do?
Get a job, I guess. I mean, it's not like I was going to college with you anyways.
Okay, we're going to play the second clip.
Is this where he went in?
Okay, that was... thank you, Rob. So, Karen Andrew, you mentioned that you've gotten interesting questions and comments. Could you... what would be the one that's that struck you the most as a question from your people that's watched the screening there in Berlin?
The questions have really run a very large gamut. They people are curious about what it's like to grow up in a small town in rural Alaska. They have lots of questions about the environment in, of Alaska, about different things that are going on. I mean, people tend to be fascinated with Alaska. All over the world, everybody's, you know, everybody's heard of Alaska, and the film provides an opportunity for them to see what it's really like to grow up in a place like Barrow or in a place in rural Alaska. And we brought along a couple of the actors, actually, Josiah Pukatuk and Frank Ireland, and they've gotten an opportunity to speak with a lot of, especially young people here in Berlin, about the experience of, you know, what it's like in Alaska and then what it was like to make the movie and stuff like that.
Many of the people have asked about the language. They're very curious about the language, and there's scenes that represent an Akka, a grandmother, and her grandson, and the difference in their, you know, the way they communicate. So it's been interesting to talk about the Inupiaq in it as well.
Okay, is there questions from committee members? Representative Foster, you have a question for the people online from Berlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious again, where did you say this was shot?
Barrow, Alaska.
Barrow.
Up in and around Barrow. A lot of the film was actually shot out on the Arctic Ocean itself.
All right. One more question. Representative Tuck?
Yeah, and if the, both of you don't mind sharing, because I remember one of the questions that was asked at the, one of the film festivals was the language that the grandmother spoke, was that scripted?
Oh.
The scenes with the Akka character is played by Rosabelle Rexford from Barrow. She pretty much completely improvised her scenes. I would just tell her what the scene was about in general, and then she would speak, and she would just sort of make the scene up as she went. And she spoke entirely in Inupiaq. And the scenes were between her her character and Josiah's character, one of the two boys that go walking across the lagoon in Barrow there. And those scenes are entirely done in Inupiaq, and it was part of it was to kind
Josiah's
of
Josiah's in English.
Yeah, it was kind of to explore how the language is working between generations up there.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your testimony. We have several other people that are going to testify, so we wanted to give you the first opportunity. Congratulations on your success, and I hope there's many more.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we have...
Bye-bye.
Bye now. is we have several people signed up to testify, one more telephonically, but let's do a little bit of work on the bill before we take the rest of the testimony. His last meeting, we did discuss amendment number 2 and amendment number 3. So at this time, we'll officially move them. We'll start with amendment number 2, Representative Foster. If you can see through the spill there.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 2.
And that is LS0356/A2. Seeing no objection.
I'm going to object just for purposes of discussion, if you will, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Okay, and I'm sorry, can you read amendment number 2 real quick for me? What's the...
Sure. Amendment number 2, what that does is that increases the tax credit for the rural portion from 2% to 4%, with the reasoning that I think it's hard enough just to get, film industry up to Alaska, let alone up to rural Alaska where it's so expensive. And I think 2%, with the high cost of transportation and once you get out to, rural Alaska, just all of the expenses are so high in terms of fuel costs and just logistical issues. And so the intention there was to maybe try and provide a little more incentive to get out to rural Alaska. Thank you.
And Mr. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, that's one of the big challenges, too, because we went, just like we saw that On the Ice film, how we were able to share with the rest of the world Alaska's culture, and I think that's very important. And I think that this will help in creating the infrastructure to be able to have that. One of the problems was trying to shoot in rural Alaska is just the high cost of freight and shipment and being able to have accommodations. The infrastructure is not there for, housing and restaurants and hospitality and so on and so forth. And so, and that's one of the things I mentioned in a previous hearing that, one of the things that we want to try to do also is create a bubble up effect, if you will, films done locally for national distribution. And I believe this would help. One of the concerns, though, is just making sure that we're not, we're going from 44 to 46% sometimes sounds like a big number. And I think it's a great number to attract the film industry because they'll be looking at Alaska first if they look anywhere else, and seeing that. But just as long as we are able to properly sell it to the public. And so with that, with those comments, Mr. Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Seeing no objection to adopting amendment number 2, it's part of the bill. Debbie, just for the record, Representative Keller has been here for several minutes. I apologize for that oversight.
Oh, I apologize for being late.
And we do have one more amendment that I'm aware of, amendment number 3. Representative Olson.
I move that we adopt amendment number 3, being 27LS0356/A.3.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendment's been adopted. Thank you for that. At this time, let's return to people that have signed up to testify. Andrew and Kara have already testified by phone from Berlin. This time, Deborah, could you please come? Excuse me. We'll do the video presentation. Okay, PowerPoint, excuse me. Yes, Deb. When you're ready to cue it up, but right before you cue it up, please state your name and your affiliation for the record, and as well as Bryce, could you do the same, just for the record?
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Deborah Schilt. I'm here representing the Alaska Crew Training, and this is Bryce.
Habiger, Bryce Habiger for the record.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
All right. Hi, I'd like to apologize, first of all, for Drew and Ted and John Voigt not being here. I know they all wanted to be here, but instead you're going to get us. So my name is Deborah Schilt. I'm a co-founder and program administrator for Alaska Crew Training, Inc. Our training program wouldn't exist except for the success of Alaska's Film Incentive Bill. Joining me today is Bryce. He just finished working on Ghost Vision, a smaller feature that shot in Anchorage, and he's an active member of AFG, living here in Juneau. My backstory is I went to film school in Canada, and then I moved to Los Angeles, where I started in the film business on features like Goonies and My Girl. Now, 20 features, 200 commercials, and 28 years later, I'm calling Alaska home. This past year, I was one of two Alaska casting directors on the feature Everybody Loves Whales. I helped form the Alaska Film Group, Alaska's Film and Video Trade Association. In 2009, with the passage of Alaska's film incentives, we saw a need for training a larger workforce. AFG wasn't interested, so Alaska Crew Training was formed. This illustrates the production dynamic when Alaska's open for the film business. Newsflash, Alaska's hot. According to a recent article in the Anchorage Daily News, you'd have to watch TV 24 hours a day for 2 weeks straight to see every episode of Alaska-based reality programming since Deadliest Catch launched in 2005. Think reality TV doesn't spend enough? Well, what about film and TV-induced tourism? That's a measurable fact. Just ask the rangers at Denali Park about increased visitation to Into the Wild, visiting the bus. Last month, Discovery's newest series about Alaska bush pilots became their biggest premiere with over 2.6 million viewers turning in. That's more than three times Alaska's population. No other state right now has more cable shows per capita than Alaska. We've entered our next gold rush, and this one isn't taking any resources out of the ground. It's Alaska-based stories, shot here, and shown around the world. On a recent IMDb search of project listing Alaska as a shooting location, 13 pages of titles came up. 13 pages. What do you think we need to get ourselves to 20? An executive producer on Everybody Loves Whales gave me this list when I asked him what we were lacking. A film office fully engaged with a website that really works for producers. A soundstage with more equipment, more infrastructure, and a larger trained workforce. A trained workforce needs two things: a basic understanding of how film productions work and on-the-job training. We can do that. On average, background extras on Whales earned $135 per day. Paul Schweiger, for instance, worked 35 days on Whales. He earned $4,500 in his SAG card. Elmer Bukoyuk from Shaktulik earned $2,300 over 21 days. 49 out of 63 speaking roles were cast with Alaskans, earning a combined income of over $160,000. Two Alaskans landed lead roles earning over $20,000 in 7 weeks, two others over $16,000. These lead actors came from Chivak, Juneau, Kotzebue. They came from across Alaska. Call sheets can tell a crew who's working each day, where, and on what scenes. Alaska Crew Training is focused right now on feature films because they hire the most crew. A workforce is that combination of on-the-job training and basic film instruction, and that instruction comes from multiple sources. The Alaskans that were hired on Everybody Loves Whales breaks down as follows. The working crew was a combination of department heads from entry-level positions, depending on film experience. Their wages varied from a minimum wage to $2,000 a day. Most of these jobs are in the technical or tradesman's categories, not skills typically found in a university curriculum. When Act One formed in 2009, we looked at other film training programs. We looked at Full Sail, a mobile training program like PATS out of LA, and university and state partnership programs like New Mexico Models. We also looked at AFI. AFI is a leader in advanced film training and respected throughout the industry. I had a personal contact there, an instructor I had worked with, so I spoke with him and other faculty members, and we came up with a grassroots roots approach that could grow with Alaska's workforce needs. We realized that it was foolish to train workers without projects, so we held off offering classes until we knew there were jobs coming into the state. Then in 2010, we launched our production 101 boot camps. We've had 6 boot camps to date and have nearly 100 that have gone through our programs. In 2011, we'll continue with our successful boot camp training. We hope to branch beyond Anchorage with online offerings and begin our Level 1 and Level 2 training courses with instructors from the American Film Institute. We start with entry-level classes and build on that foundation and success. But besides training a potential workforce, organizations like Anchorage's ACVB and Native corporations have attended our workshops to learn just how this business works. We've had a lot of success stories. Wally Scott is a local Kotzebue boy. and an Act One student who was hired as a PA on Wales, and now he's studying directing at Columbia University. Jessica Moore is an Act One student from Eagle River. She interned on several productions last year. She was a set PA on Ghost Vision, and she's currently working as a PA for the History Channel. Morgan Willis has her BA in communication from Arizona State. She worked on several shoots over the past 2 years in Alaska as a location scout and a casting assistant on Wales, as a set PA on Ghost Vision, and now she's in Los Angeles looking for more experience. Kyle Hitchcock is an Act One student who worked on Wales as a model builder in the art department. He's finishing up his architecture degree now at Montana State. And Karen Casanovas completed an Act One course and went into jobs on both Wales and Ghost Vision as a PA, and then into locations and set decorating departments. In this illustration of where our workforce might come from, you can all see that all of Alaska could be impacted. Act One is focused on training programs that work with each market segment. In rural areas, online programs may be our most effective teaching device. From over 50 towns and villages across Alaska, 2,471 people were extras on Everybody Loves Wales. Many of those individuals went on to jobs on Ghost Vision. Others are signing up now for more training. In our January class, 25% of our students had worked on Wales as extras and are now interested in finding jobs in the film industry. From Kaktovik to Ketchikan, from Barrow to Bethel, Alaska's got talent. Many Alaskans have migrated out of state for schooling, for jobs, for careers in the business. We're hoping the incentives will give them a chance to come home and find work here in the film industry. Our vision is to continually increase class offerings. We've started with those entry-level jobs because Alaska has a limited pool of seasoned, experienced workers. Our level 1 and 2 classes are best suited for individuals who already have some training and want to increase their skill sets. We're gearing up for more crews and classes. Where we're headed is to deepen Alaska's crew base to accommodate two large features at the same time by building our graduates to 500 over the next 3 years. Training can be varied and diverse, but all training programs should work towards growing Alaska's crew base and encouraging local hire. Alaska Crew Training works with anyone that shares our passion and our scope. To date, we've been recognized by the Alaska Film Office as a training resource for crew. But all Alaskans can continue to work together on building our workforce, and here's a few ways that you can do that. You're welcome to contact us. I have cards here for any of you who are interested, or maybe some of you are thinking about a new career in the movie business. We've got classes. Check out our website for updates at www.alaskacrewtraining.org. We'd like to thank all of you for your attention and open this up for questions. I'll be casting next month if you're interested.
Well, Deb, the building is full of characters. That's
Alaska's full of characters.
All right. From committee members, is there questions? Deborah, that was outstanding. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We have another PowerPoint for the next person that's coming up. Robin and John, could you come forward, please? After it's queued up, then you could please state your name, affiliation, and begin your PowerPoint presentation. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Robin Cornfield. I work for NANA Development Corporation.
John Rentz with NANA Development.
Okay.
We're here to talk about private sector investment in the Alaska film industry. So good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Robin Cornfield, Vice President of Communication and Marketing for NANA Development Corporation, which is the business arm of NANA Regional Corporation, owned by 12,500 Inupiaq people who originated in Northwest Alaska. NANA supports House Bill 67 because this legislation is about helping to create a new industry for Alaska, a new industry that is a renewable resource making movies. NANA Development's Board of Directors has learned a great deal about the film industry. They've been to studios and sound stages and have mulled over the risks of investing in the film industry. They support, and NANA Development Corporation supports, expanding the film tax credit incentive. It's good for Alaska, and it will lead to private sector jobs and expand our economy. Nana Development Corporation's investment in Alaska's film industry is a natural. We are an Alaska-focused company that focuses on creating training opportunities and jobs for our shareholders, most of whom live in Alaska. And we also have the expertise necessary to support the film industry. I just missed that. Sorry. Nana is investing in building the infrastructure for a film industry in Alaska, and this expanded tax credit is a key to its success. Last September, we made a multi-million dollar investment by becoming partners in a firm called Evergreen Films, which specializes in 3D films for a general audience. Nana is creating a new film company, which we're calling Pixik, which is up on the screen. Pixik is an Inupiaq word that means to jump up or rebound or spring back, and we chose that word because our new film services company needs to be extremely quick and responsive to the film industry clients. It is a company that will provide one-stop shopping for companies making movies in Alaska. Nana already has expertise in many fields that are necessary for the film industry. We provide catering, security, transportation, logistics, construction, and lodging. And these are all fields that are necessary to the film industry, and all fields where Nana has developed business success. I mentioned our investment in Evergreen Films. And Evergreen is working on a film with Alaska as the backdrop called Walking with Dinosaurs in 3D. And one of the things we discovered in working with Evergreen is that we had a capability in one of our business units, which is an engineering firm, to assist and to shorten the amount of time it's going to take to produce this film by over 1 year, and it's called LiDAR. Our company, WH Pacific, which is an engineering company, invested in technology called LiDAR, which is being used by Evergreen to basically survey the background so that when the animated dinosaurs are put in to the view in relation to the backdrops, that they get it right. And that was very intriguing. And the reason I mention it is that there's so much we don't know about what the possibilities are for Alaska businesses. And this was something we discovered by accident. And so now our company, WH Pacific, is out marketing that capability, which wasn't why they invested in that piece of equipment in the first place. We've done a lot of research. We're a conservative company when we make investments, and we spent a lot of time researching the film industry. As you can see by the chart, the domestic consumer film expenditures has grown year over year. Even in 2008 and 2009, recession years, spending increased. And worldwide, the U.S. is 6% of the entire world's population, but 50% of the consumer dollars spent on film entertainment is in the U.S. But international markets are becoming more important and are expected to continue to outpace domestic growth for the near future. We've also looked at Vancouver. As you know, perhaps our partner at Red Dog Mine is located in Vancouver, and our board has become accustomed to seeing filming going on there, and they were quite intrigued by it. And it is one city that is an example of the tax incentive and how the investment in the film industry can make a big difference, starting with a very small television show, The X-Files, back in 1994. This Canadian city has seen movie production values grow from $400 million to $1.2 billion, and the industry has helped to create more than 20,000 jobs. Because we believe so strongly in the future of Alaska's film industry, Nana and Evergreen and other private sector partners have begun investigating the possibility of developing a soundstage in Anchorage. And we have some renderings. These renderings are about as far as we've got. We found some property, and we've designed these renderings. There's nothing fancy about it, just production offices and a large stage. And additionally, the studio would include a green screen, allowing background scenes to be added to a film shot in the space. And we feel that investment in the soundstage infrastructure, combined with extending the tax credit, will encourage more producers to come to Alaska. continual productions help provide on-the-job training that Alaskans need to ensure continued work and growth in this industry. Developing films take time, and this particular slide shows that the first 2 years, which are shown there in blue, are 18 months. This is our Dino film that we're working with on Evergreen. It takes a while to write a story, hire a writer, figure out what it is that you're going to do. Then you've got to make sure you secure the financing. You pre-sell the film. That takes a good 6 months to a year, perhaps. And then you go into production. You bring your crews to Alaska. You build your sets. You do the filming. You do the post-production. That takes another 2 years. And finally, after 5 years, your film is out in the world. This production we're working on is a global film. It's going to go out to everyone, and it's pre-sold into international markets, and we're real excited about it. But the point is, it takes a longer time than people might realize to produce a film, and so the extension to 36 months for the tax incentive program is an important element of it. And then also expanding the dollars allowable under the tax credit from $100 million to $200 million is important. It will allow the industry to grow in Alaska as the infrastructure we are creating also grows. It will allow for private industry jobs and economic growth. At NANA, our mission is to improve the quality of life for our people. We have a simple overall strategy to invest in companies with potential for growth and to look for opportunities that will provide training and jobs for our shareholders. Our work with the film industry, we are hoping, will do just that. There is a good foundation for a growing film industry here, and it started with the original Alaska Film Production Incentive Program. Future success in the industry is based on movie producers choosing Alaska over several other states and countries to shoot their films. With an extended tax credit and private investment and needed infrastructure, we hope to entice more producers to Alaska. We think this is a successful path to help diversify our economy, fostering private sector investments in business development, and to create good-paying jobs that can help keep college graduates working in Alaska. Everybody's talking about Everybody Loves Whales. The numbers that they contributed to our economy are significant. Alaska resident wages were more than $4 million, and goods and services purchases were above $7.5 million. There were Alaskans in front of and behind the camera. 12,000 hotel rooms were used, and more than 8,000 days of car rentals were purchased. NANA supports this legislation because it will help spur what could be a new industry in Alaska that will create private sector investment and private sector jobs. Thank you.
All right. That's very good. Thank you. Is there questions from committee members? Representative Gardner.
Question just occurred to me about the soundstage. Would you hazard a guess as to the likelihood that somebody will come to us for funding for a soundstage, or do you think that will be privately done? I know it needs to be large, but my understanding is it's not really complex.
It's not complex, and there are other states that have funded their infrastructure, but we're planning on building this with along with some partners.
What's critical for the investment is the duration, is knowing that we have some certainty for a period of time. That's what it really is needed today to start to put some of these investments in place.
Representative Gardner.
And do you think the 10-year extension gives that kind of certainty? Is it adequate?
Financially, we think that's an important number. It does give some duration. These types of investments are not high profit investments. There's a lot of risk when you start putting capital in place. And that's one of the attractions of this bill, is that it gives us some certainty over time.
Thank you.
Other questions? Appreciate your leadership in this part of the business. It's important for not only your corporation, but it's important for Alaska. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. At this time, we let's go to Bob Crockett. Are you online, sir?
Can you hear me?
Bob, we can hear you. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony on House Bill 67, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Crockett. I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Film Group. I'd like to talk to you about the importance of House Bill 67 to the economic future of this industry in our state. The Alaska Film Group is an all-volunteer nonprofit trade association with a diverse membership base statewide that began in 1992. We provide a voice for the film and video industry of Alaska. We conduct educational forums for improvement of our craft. We promote Alaska as a film and video destination. And we create economic opportunities for our membership and all Alaskans. Since the inception of this incentive program in 2008, AFG has increased membership by 40%. The film industry can bring a lot to Alaska's economy. Most people don't realize how broad an economic impact any given production can bring. Employment of a local workforce, local purchase of materials and supplies, room rentals and bed tax at area hotels, increased uses of caterers, restaurants, and retail venues, increased usage in the transportation sector, including planes, trains, ferries, autos, limousines, taxis, and trucking, increases in shipping industries, air and ground freight providers, and ground courier and delivery services, ongoing increases in tourism, increase in local tax revenues. As this administration has indicated in the past and still holds true, as Alaskans, we all have the same goals in mind for our state: progress, productivity, and putting Alaskans to work. Some of the goals are continued progress in attracting productions to Alaska, continued crew training, continued job growth for Alaskans, continued education, and continued growth of our infrastructure. Film and video production is a high-wage industry employing a large portion of the labor force, such as electricians, carpenters, and painters, to specialized fields like art direction and hair and makeup design. These are good, high-paying jobs. Skilled individuals can join guilds and unions offering health care, pensions, and other benefits. Film industry salaries in 2008 averaged $76,000. That's 72% higher than the national average. Everyone has seen the credits roll on a major motion picture, so you realize it takes a lot of people to make a movie. But have you ever thought about who's employed behind the scenes? Here's a short list of those individuals and companies that support a film crew. Wage earners, of course, air service providers, catering companies, hotels, retailers, transportation and shipping maintenance firms, rental companies, security companies, tourism businesses, and the list goes on. Looking at a couple of Alaska-based series, Northern Exposure and Men and Trees, these were television series about quirky life in Alaska. In 4 years, Northern Exposure contributed $92 million to Roslyn, Washington, while Men and Trees spent approximately $20 million per season and ran from 2006 to 2008. Dana Clare, a premier incentive specialist from Los Angeles, indicated that series TV shoots 8 to 9 months for each season, requiring a soundstage with a controlled environment. TV shows average 20 to 25 episodes running from August, September to April, May, roughly 8 to 9 months. The value to jobs and tourism by having a television series shot in your state, according to Ms. Clare, is priceless. The ground spend, or actual amount of money that was spent by a production in a location, can have far-reaching economic impacts. But another economic engine related to this industry is film-induced tourism. Whether a visitor comes to Alaska on vacation because of a certain film or a film with a nostalgic theme lures them here, it's all induced by the films they enjoy. When Lord of the Rings trilogy was announced to be shot in New Zealand, the country's government appointed a Minister of the Rings, whose responsibility was to maximize benefits in terms of filming employment and film-induced tourism. Destination marketing strategies were used to support the community's vision for the region, to broaden the visitor base, and to even out seasonal peaks and troughs. At some point, Alaska may apply similar marketing strategies. There's a number of ways that major motion pictures impact tourism in Alaska. Film tourism is part of a holiday. Film tourism is a primary travel motivator. Film tourism to studios and sound stages, nostalgic film tourism pilgrimages. Here's what some of the Alaskan newspapers had to say about movies filming in Alaska. The ADN, how's this for a plot twist? A movie about Alaska being shot in Alaska. The Juno Empire, wondering what the next big movie to Alaska will be. Whatever the plot, one thing is for sure, movies filmed in Alaska bring money to the state. The Arctic Sounder, Alaska is jumping on the movie business bandwagon, and Nana is hoping to lead the charge. The impacts that everybody loves whales was substantial. Nana had mentioned just a few, but over 12,100 room nights were secured at the local hotels. Over 7,900 security man hours, over 8,800 rental car days, thousands of talent cast from 50 different communities across Alaska, to mention a few. In addition, excuse me, in addition, visiting crew experienced every tourism activity that was available on their days off. It was impressive watching not only individuals experience different activities, but groups of people on every day off would go out and experience whatever activity Alaska had to offer. The movie industry is in a state of change. Independent films are becoming more and more popular. DVDs are entering more and more into households. YouTube, movies, and the Internet are increasing our revenues for viewing, or venues for viewing films. Worldwide box office receipts are on the rise. 2006 reached an all-time high with $25.82 billion for all films released. In 2009, box office sales reached even higher levels at $29.9 billion. This creates more opportunity for Alaska to be noticed. Five of the top 2009 grossing films worldwide were Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, which in that series, one of the films in that series, I should say, filmed second unit in Alaska. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, $302 million, which was a PG movie. The movie Up, $293 million, which was also a PG movie. The Twilight Saga, New Moon, $284.5 million, that was a PG-13 movie. And Avatar, $283.6 million, which was a PG-13 movie. Interesting to note that the top five were either PG or PG-13 rated. 607 films released in the U.S. in 2006. The average cost to make and market a major motion picture film, according to the Motion Picture Association of America, was $100.3 million. In 2006. In 2009, 72% of all films released were independents. 28% were studio productions, and 4% of those were 3D productions, which released 20 films and represents the largest growth area. One key benefit of implementing this incentive program was it encouraged productions to travel past Vancouver and Manitoba, our two largest competitors. The U.S. is gaining ground with the implementation of competitive economic tax incentives, and Alaska has joined ranks to compete on the world stage. In 2005, other countries fared well with production. Canada boasted 142 feature films in that year, with the next lower-ranked country, Great Britain, with 18. This imbalance remains today. The Guardian was set in Alaska, but predominantly shot in Louisiana. Both Louisiana and New Mexico have been on the forefront of enacting successful film incentive legislation. Since 2001, both states have experienced a compound annual employment growth of 23% per year. Louisiana is enjoying a steady growth of film production, third in the U.S. behind California and New York. How did they do it? 30% production tax credit on spend, 5% additional credit on Louisiana residents, 40% credit on infrastructure development, they'll buy back a tax credit at the rate of 85 cents on the dollar, and they made their tax credit permanent. In 2001, according to the Association of Film Commissioners International, high-end union-scale studio films spent an average of $100,000 per day. As of 2009, that number has risen to $225,000 per day. There are some problems with movies about Alaska shot elsewhere, of course. Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush set in Alaska was shot in California along with others. North, Alaska, 30 Days of Night, The Proposal, Snow Dogs, and The Gray. This used to be the trend. Dozens of films and television series are focusing in on where the most favorable business climate is around the world. Alaska is open for business, but we need to keep that door open with the extension of our current tax credit incentive program. Continued growth in this global market requires a strong commitment to understanding the concerns raised by producers and private sector Alaska businesses. At this moment, Alaska has filming locations, midnight sun, year-round access to snow and ice, limited skilled professional crew, good communications and transportation infrastructure, well-developed leisure industry close to film locations, hospitable political, social, and business environment, and an economic incentive that's working. Some of the missing criteria includes filming facilities, sound stages and studios, a funded crew training program, support service infrastructure, long-term incentive program providing confidence with producers that this program will continue through the planning stages. Just to make note, right now we're working with a large feature. It's taken 2 years to get this far. Hopefully after their visit to Alaska in a few days, we'll get to what we call a green light. Another movie based on a Stephen King book called Bag of Bones is planning to begin pre-production this April and shoot through September. The future is bright, but it won't continue after 2013 if we don't act. We've learned how we can attract a multimillion-dollar global industry that can work for Alaska. The points we felt were critical for Alaska incentive programs to address. Extension of the current tax incentive another 10 years, which will provide producers with the confidence to plan ahead. Extension of the current tax incentive another 10 years, which will provide the confidence for private sector businesses to invest in infrastructure. Maintain the basic structure of the current tax incentive and support the creation of educational programs for training future crews. House Bill 67 extends the current Alaska Film Production Tax Incentive Program for 10 years with $100 million available in incentives for the first 5 years and $100 million in incentives for the final 5 years. These bills will continue the successful economic diversification and development it has already shown while providing Alaska businesses opportunities to properly plan and capitalize on Alaska's newest multi-billion-dollar industry. Passing this legislation will continue on the successful path we began in 2008. Alaska's commitment to this program will ensure that jobs will be sustainable, infrastructure will have an opportunity to be built, and businesses will be inclined to invest. Our economy will benefit as the film industry grows and diversifies this economy. Training programs through the university system and other means will help in building our crew base. A long-term commitment will provide the time for infrastructure investment. We've proven that this industry creates jobs for Alaskans and provides economic opportunities for Alaska businesses, both small and large. Film and television projects offer invaluable marketing and promotion for Alaska tourism products and business. And lastly, what are the gains? With this tax credit extension, Alaska is poised to create hundreds of jobs, stimulate business, create new businesses, and help diversify Alaska's economy. It's an industry that builds support service infrastructure, an industry that builds our economy and our job base, an industry that multiplies its economic impact through increased tourism, providing future generations of Alaskans with diverse career opportunities, and it meets the governor and Alaska's vision of becoming steadily more self-sufficient. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Seeing no questions, We will move to the next person to testify. It's the intent of the chair to be ready for our brief, just a snapshot of low-flow presentation, lunch and learn presentation from Admiral Barrett at 11:30. But Representative Foster, unfortunately, your celebrity constituent, Ferno Tweedo, dropped off, and so if she comes back on, we'll ask her to give her testimony. Briefly, Katie Miller, are you online? Did Ted Smith arrive? Okay. I believe that's all that signed up to testify. We do have Joanna Bales, a director of Tax Division on revenue side, and then Juanetta Ayers and Curtis Thayer are here. They're available for questions. So, Representative Olson, did you have a question for the Deputy Commissioner?
Nope.
Yeah.
Saw him earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some questions with the selling of the film tax credits. I know that there's been some problems in other states. One state had to abandon their program because of the scandal and the misuse of selling those tax credits. And I was wondering if there's any way to put some sideboards on here to make sure that Alaska doesn't suffer those same problems.
Joanna, could you please come forward, state your name and your title for the record, and could you answer the representative's questions?
For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division. Through the Chair, Representative Thompson, I'd like to just clarify that, first of all, the scandal that took place in the state of Iowa was actually collusion on the part of the producer and the head of their film office to commit tax fraud. Fortunately enough, though, for Iowa, they did have controls in place that they were able to find that collusion and fraud. In Alaska, we also have those controls in place. So the selling of the tax credits, we do protect the confidentiality of the corporate income taxpayers that buy those. But all of the information about the production and the amount of the credit and the film itself is available through the film office. So the amount of the credit doesn't change by virtue of the fact that it's transferred. So we do keep very close track of those. And the amount to the state doesn't increase or decrease with those transfers.
Okay, thank you very much. That kind of makes me feel a little more comfortable that we do have protection on the sideboards here.
Yeah, with Joanna on the job, I think we're okay. Is there any other questions that why Joanna's up here? Juanetta, did you wish to comment? Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Juanetta Ayers. I'm the Director for the Division of Economic Development. With regard to Representative Thompson's question, I just wanted to also add that we have a review committee process for when the final applications come in. So we have multiple sets of eyes looking at those applications before they're advanced on to the Department of Revenue at this point. And we're going to be implementing an additional level of review in the pre-qualification process as well. Not because we've had any concerns about that process to date, but just that we feel like that added level of scrutiny is always a good thing, and we'll be introducing that process.
Representative Thompson.
Yes, one other question. One of the presentations we just saw talked about the length of time from beginning to release and revenue starting to come in and marketing is like 5 years. We're changing this from 24 months to 36 months. Is there a reason for that limitation, or is that something that we need to look at, expanding the length of time to cover how long it actually takes to do some of these productions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Thompson, the length of time is with regard to transacting the marketability of the tax certificate once it's been issued. And so that just broadens that window for the buyer and seller to find each other and transact that exchange.
Okay.
Yeah. if I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I think you might be referring to the, are you referring to the 24-month period that is now being expanded to 36 months under Section 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, because I don't think there's any change in the amount of time that they can sell the credit. Right now, that's a three-year period, which is actually pretty adequate. Mm-hmm. Those certificates are sold. And we've had ones where we've issued and sold the certificate in the same day. So,
okay.
Sorry. Yeah, I apologize. Yes, I misspoke. I do apologize. The additional length of time, actually, I think prequalifications have that 24-month period, and part of that is that we need to track this process that the productions have to prequalify. It's important for us to keep track of that. If a production is not going to utilize the credit for which they have pre-qualified, we want to have that available to other productions as they come forward.
Okay. I think. Thank you.
May I address that, Mr. Chair?
Representative Tuck, to Representative Thompson's concern.
Yes. On that slide, it was talking about, yes, that slide right there. It was talking about from concept going into production, but you'll see where the production starts. Mm-hmm. That's when the tax credits start applying. Mm-hmm. And then so I think that going from a 24-month period to a 36-month period will provide adequacy. A lot of our films these days, especially when we look at the 3D technologies that's going to be utilized and the graphic technologies going to be utilized for the Walking with the Dinosaurs, we believe that that's going to be an adequate window frame. But that's the reason why we've extended it, because movies like Avatar, when they get into those productions, it does take a little bit longer than 24 months. But when you look at, for example, Ghost Vision, that was a seven-year process. And once they figured out what their the script that they liked, and once it was adapted to Alaska, boom, they were up here within 4 months and then began shooting. So it is a tight window for some of these shots. But for those extensive ones, I believe the 36 months would be adequate.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, Joanna and Juanita here. Any other questions? Seeing none. We did have a little technical difficulty. Testimony is not closed yet, but we'll try again. Katie Miller, are you online?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Please state your name, your affiliation, and we just have a few more minutes, but if you could give your testimony, appreciate it.
I'll be quick. My name is Katie Miller. I am testifying on behalf of Bill 67 in support of extending the tax credits. I'm from Los Angeles, and I'm testifying from Patina Pictures, which is my company. Thank you so much for the committee for taking a listen to me. So I'm a film producer and owner of Los Angeles-based production company, Patina Pictures. I'm also a proud Alaskan. I grew up here. After graduating from West High School 15 years ago, I moved to New York to pursue a career in film. Since then, I've had films at the Sundance Film Festival, AFI, and I'm currently in development on a feature with David Duchovny that's being written by an Oscar nominee. Due to Alaskan's tax incentive program, I see my next projects not occurring in Los Angeles, but in Alaska. The tax credits have created an opportunity for me to continue to work within this industry. So absolutely, I'm in support of extending the credits so that we can quickly turn focus on the next issue at hand, which in my mind is building the necessary infrastructure to meet the industry's needs, specifically the workforce. For the last 10 months, I've spent a considerable amount of time and my company's resources knocking on the doors of Alaskan policymakers, educators, state agencies, union organizations, and the private sector, asking everyone the same question: what are we going to do about workforce development? Everyone understands and agrees that this is something that has to be done. It's time to ensure that this industry puts Alaskans to work, and this is a much larger issue than just one company can handle. New Mexico's crew base went from 75 to 1,200 in 5 years once they initiated their training program. This rise in crew base supported an increase in production spending from $8 to $450 million. Michigan's TikTok Studios, with the help of a grant from its government, initiated a similar training program that prepared unemployed auto workers for jobs in the film industry. You know what both of those programs had in common? A joint partnership between government, industry, the local IOTC, and community colleges. It's really time to bring everybody to the table to conquer this.
In conclusion, I support the extending of the tax credits. I definitely want to go home and work within this industry, and I'm eager to help create this necessary workforce development component so that our state can more fully realize the benefits of the investment that they've already made. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Seeing no questions for you, Katie. I appreciate your efforts and wish you well. Thank you very much. Okay, I believe that's it for testimony. So public testimony is closed. The bill is before us in committee. It's an amended version. We took care of those earlier. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 67 with the attached amendment from committee.
With individual recommendations?
With individual recommendations. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the fiscal note. Thank you. An attached fiscal note.
Good. See no objection? Bill's on to the next committee. We're just, have the Admiral Barrett in the room. And as you know, I've made an arrangement with the co-chair of House Resources that whenever there is a lunch and learn, this committee, in case you can't go to the full hour of the lunch and learn, that the presenter will give us a snapshot of that. So... can take advantage of that. So we'll just take a couple minutes to sign the report, and then we'll ask the Admiral to come forward for a snapshot of the Lunch and Learn low flow issue with Alyeska. That's fine. Thank you.
Is he frightened?
Admiral, we're almost done here, so if you can come forward and get ready, I'd appreciate that.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Deb, we're back on the record here. Again, Admiral, I know you got a busy life and a busy schedule, but I appreciate you taking the time just to sort of preview these nine members on what you're going to talk about at lunch today. And obviously, in other committees, we've been talking about the pipeline a lot. And so can you share your perspective and the bottom line of your presentation at noon today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Tom Barrett, president of Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. And for yourself and members of the committee, I'm honored to have a few minutes with you to preview what we're going to do at lunchtime. As you know, and as most Alaskans know, we had a shutdown January 8th because of a pipe leak into containment at Pump Station 1. And I think it's important for Alaskans to understand what went on to get the pipeline back up, who did it, how they did it, and what the problems are behind it. And in short order, what we'll be talking about is, and I have two members who were instrumental in returning that line to service with me. I have Brendan LaBelle Hamer right behind me here. He's a maintenance supervisor from Pump Station 1 at Prudhoe Bay, lives in Fairbanks. And Betsy Haynes from Anchorage, who's our movement supervisor. And again, in terms of bringing the whole system up, was instrumental to doing that safely and successfully under some very challenging circumstances. So the first thing I'll be talking about, you've seen or heard about the kind of movie True Grit recently, right? And there's a lot of stories around Alaska about how tough and innovative and determined people who built this pipeline were 33 years ago when you did it. And what I want to let Alaskans know is that that level of determination, that level of true grit, if you will, is still very much here in Alaska. We had almost 600 people working 7x24 to restore service under challenging circumstances. And so the first thing we'll be doing at lunch is having folks like Brendan and Betsy tell you what it was like and the challenges we faced. For example, doing a bypass line repair with hydrocarbon still flowing into containment at pump station 1, where we had 20 below temperatures inside the building. Okay. In those kind of conditions, doing over 20 field wells successfully, passing X-ray the first time. So we had Alyeska personnel and our contractors. The cooperation we got from around the state, whether it was the refinery at North Pole, shippers in and out of Valdez, all up and down the line, help from our owner companies and others to pull this off successful. It was an extraordinary effort by extraordinary people, and I want to make sure that that does not go unnoticed, because it's, I think sometimes it flies a little below the radar. It's very much to the credit of the Alaskans that were involved in this. So that's the first piece. The second piece is, and I'd been on the job 8 days. I come out of the Coast Guard background, a lot of it up here in Alaska, about 15 years. But what was striking to me, we're much closer. This is kind of a wake-up call for us on a couple of levels, but I think it should be a wake-up call for the state. You're closer to the most of the challenges we face in one way or another walk right back to declining flow in our line. Right now we're pushing about 630,000 barrels of oil a day. It's on a downslope. It's been on a steady downslope. When this line first started, it was at 700,000 barrels a day. Then it went up to about 2.1 million. It's been coming down since, and it's on a downslope. It's headed down. And the challenges that that poses for us operationally, just in terms of running this pipeline, are increasing all the time. And every day we're in new territory. And when we had a winter shutdown in January, at the levels we're at, we're very much in new territory. And there's a lot of risk that goes with it. We were tightly managing the risk we had in the way we approached the response, and I'll talk a little bit to that later. But it's very tough, and it was a position that I was surprised with how much of a challenge we face tying back to flow issues right now. Not 5 years from now, not 10 years from now, but right now. And so we'll talk about that at lunch and kind of show people the picture of where this is headed. And really, there's got to be some urgency to doing something to reverse that, to arrest the downturn or to reverse it from the point of view of a pipeline operator. We're a common carrier. I'm the first CEO, by the way, that has not come from one of the owner companies. Okay, so I'm not one of them, in the sense that I work for them directly. I work for them as president of Alyeska. So my interest is operating this line safely. When it was down, restoring it safely and promptly. And thanks to a lot of effort, we did it. But the declining flow is behind most of our problem set. Obviously, looking at this back, too, I don't want to diminish this. We can't have leaks. We have to have essentially flawless operation. And we're looking very hard right now, and we'll continue to do so over the next several months, at our risk profiles. Are we doing everything, I mean everything we possibly can to ensure that that operation is safe? We paid a lot of attention to it. We restored service here with no one seriously hurt and no harm to the environment. But that's got to be our standard operation every day, and we know that, and we're looking very hard at that. But I also want to make sure that Alaskans understand how important the flow issue is to the continued safe operation of Alyeska Pipeline. And so that's kind of the picture we'll paint. The last thing I want to share, and I'm talking as a pipeline operator. I'm not an expert in tax policy and public policy, and you are far more than me in terms of resource management issues. My model, though, that I offer you to think about as you work through these problems, which I understand are tough, right? These are not easy solution sets. It's Coast Guard, right? If I had, when I was a commander up here, if I had a SAR, a distress call from a ship going down in the Bering Sea, we threw everything we could at it right away, immediately. We launch the aircrafts. We get backup crews. We start moving fuel supplies. We look where salvage tugs are. We start watching our weather. Because if you don't do that, if you don't get moving right away, the situation may be worse than you think tomorrow. Maybe a leaking stern tube today on the ship is people in the water tomorrow. You can have a mechanical that makes maybe one of your aircraft not flyable. The weather in Alaska can turn in a heartbeat. And so tomorrow or the next day, despite your best intentions and your best efforts, you may not be able to extract yourself because you're too far behind. And we had this event on January 8th, applied the same mental model, if you will, to restoring our service. We went on parallel paths with multiple solution sets. We looked at putting in a bypass line, which was challenging because of the original pipeline design. It was very hard to isolate the line where we had the leak. We looked at way downstream cold weather contingency restarts. This was not a cold restart. We don't want to be there. I don't like it. But we started moving that contingency forward. We started looking at how long it would take, how much window we had if we could not start immediately, how much fuel supply there was at North Pole. They could run about 2 weeks. If I was down for 2 weeks, how bad would the conditions be in my strainers? And then we started thinking toward, what if we bring the line up on an interim basis? So we started moving parallel paths. We started moving people and equipment and design teams. We had to design this. This would normally take months to do a job like this. We had people do it in less than 2 weeks. That's remarkable. But we pushed forward on multiple tracks. By Sunday, it was clear that there was a very, very high risk with putting, just doing the bypass, keeping the line down, putting the bypass in and bring it back up. We might be in a really bad situation in terms of safely restoring operations at that point, given the time windows we were looking at. So we tracked into the alternative, let's do the interim restart. And as a former regulator, I can tell you, restarting a line with a known integrity breach in it runs against your DNA. Don't like doing it. It runs against everything you think is kind of right. It was the right answer here, given the various risks we had to manage. So we pushed that forward. We have very strong support from the state, from the administration, and worked through the issues with the regulators and restarted. And then we shut down when we were ready to do the bypass and put it in place. I'm looking at my flow model, and I'm thinking how long it takes to bring oil online, a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years for maybe interior fields, 10 years if your regulators will let you offshore, and I'm not liking it. And I'm not seeing that kind of urgency, the do whatever it takes. And by the way, if it turns out that oil rigs are getting in each other's way up there, well, back down and say we did too much. I don't sense that. And so part of what I'm not a decision maker on that, but just a pipeline operator. But what I want people to understand is the picture I see and what these were extraordinary efforts by any measure, right? Extraordinary. We could have an incident like this 5 years from now, 7 years from now, that has nothing to do, even if we're perfect in operation, you could have freeze up north of Valdez that would shut us down for a couple of weeks. You could get the same risk profile in winter, even if we're perfect operationally. I don't like what that looks like. You don't want to be shut down for months. I'm just not liking it. I'm really feeling passionate and urgent about letting people understand that's what we're looking at as you work through some solution. I don't know what that solution is, but that's what we're going to talk about. And anything that we can do to provide information to be helpful to educate folks, we're delighted to do. And I appreciate the chance to spend even a few minutes with you, sir.
Well, Admiral, we're obviously we're all busy, but you know some of the members here won't be able to go to luncheon, so we really appreciate this opportunity. And we try to do this with all presenters at Lunch and Learns because it's a captured audience. But first of all, it's outstanding that the head of Alyeska is showcasing employees, the real people that, you know, run the place and actually got us over that little, you know, it's not a little, but over the hump that you faced. And I just think it's outstanding that you're doing that, recognizing real people. We have a few minutes, but I'll ask the next one is obviously did, you know, people decided to pick you for your talents, and you had a stellar career in before that. But did you realize what you were getting into?
Yes. I didn't expect to have a leak on the North Slope at Pump Station 1 the first week on the job. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's a Coast Guard model. I had actually been out on the first day I started, January 1st, I went out to Pump Station 9. I met with people out there because I wanted to thank them for working on the holiday. I actually was up at Pump Station 1 Tuesday, the fourth day I had on the job, and I met with people up there at the pump station, talked about where, how, just to sense how they were and what issues they saw. I'm a believer, by the way, in really open and often communication with the people that actually do the work. One of the things that gave me, though, Mr. Chairman, and you're going back to it, I understand who does the work around here, I mean, and what it takes. And but when I was up at Pump Station 1, what I got from a day visit, and it was short, was enormous confidence, same way at 9, in the type of people we have at Alyeska, that what they're capable of. And so when this did happen, I was pretty confident that if we gave them the backup and the resources and the tool and the time to do this safely and do it well, they would do it, and they pulled it off. So I had a lot of emergency response background, but I'm enormously impressed with the people, and that's why they're here. I want Alaskans to understand. They didn't just do it. They certainly did it for our company. They certainly did it for our owners. But this line is so important to Alaska and Alaskans. They really did it for everybody in this state, and everybody in this state will benefit from their efforts. And I'm very proud to be in the position I am in and be able to work with this caliber of people. That's kind of the bottom line.
Sir, thank you for your service to Alaska and to your country, of course. But other questions from committee members? Wow.
We'll try and keep you as well informed as we can. I am pretty transparent. I won't pull any punches, for better or worse. So we'll look forward to talking to you anytime that is helpful to you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
and
members. You. For the committee's information, next week is David Gottstein. He has an idea on a gas line. That will be on Tuesday. And then House Joint Resolution 15 supporting an Arctic caucus. And you get next Thursday off. So, Deb, it is 11:42. Thank you for...